We are back to the study of the parables. We're today looking at the second parable, and that's the parable of the wheat and tares. This comes right after the parable of the sower. And there are certainly some similarities there between the two. So we're in Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. Just reviewing for a moment, one of the reasons that Jesus taught in parables was what? What was one of the reasons Jesus taught in parables that he said? Okay? And he couched it in terms or in ways where people would have to have ready hearts, that have to listen. You know, that's how he ends a lot of the parables. Is that if you want to understand, you've got to listen. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. So in other words, it takes effort, energy, time. And those people who weren't willing to do that, who didn't have an open heart, an open mind, wouldn't get the teaching of the parable. But it was because they chose not to. And in the first parable that we talked about, the parable of the sower, there were different types of people. And as we mentioned, these parables are all about the kingdom, some aspect of the kingdom. That parable was about people's hearts, their attitudes, their readiness to accept the word, and what might happen if they let the cares of the world or riches or whatever choke out the word. And so that was basically what the parable of the sower was teaching us. Then we move on now to the parable of the wheat and tares, beginning in verse 24. This is another one of the parables that Jesus explains to his disciples. Beginning in verse 24, another parable he put forth to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. So the servants of the owner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' Well, the servants said to him, 'Do you want us then to go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the time of the harvest, I'll say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Now he sets forth to explain what the parable is talking about. Of course, the people in the first century, they knew all about planting. They knew all about planting wheat. They knew all about tares and wheat and weeds and all that type of thing. It's very common for them. They knew that. They understood that. They lived that. So now Jesus explains this one to his disciples and to us, so we'll know what he's talking about. Now this, the parable of the sower was pretty straightforward. This one has been abused a lot in different ways to teach things that God never, ever intended for it to teach, unfortunately. But that goes back to, if you want to understand it, just like in the first century, you have to put forth time and effort. And when you go from one parable to another, what's represented in one parable is not necessarily what's represented in another. I mean, he might use a symbol for one thing in one parable, an entirely different symbol in another. If you try to go and lump everything together, then it'll just be confusion and chaos. So that's why you have to look at each parable independently and compare it to what else the Bible teaches. That's, of course, the key. If you ignore everything else the Bible teaches, then there's no telling what kind of crazy ideas you might come up with. So he begins explaining it in verse 36. "Then Jesus sent the multitude away and went to the house, and the disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field.' He answered and said to them," now he starts showing what each of those things meant, First of all, he says, he who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. Now remember when he gave the parable, we'll look at each one of these individually, he says, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. So he says now, the one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. So we know who he's talking about. So right off the bat, the good seed comes from where? Comes from Jesus. Comes from the Son of Man. That's typically one of his favorite expressions for describing himself. The Son of Man. And so, in his explanation, he makes that clear. Now today, is Jesus on earth sowing seed? Well, no. So where does the good seed come from? Who sows it? Well, you and I are sowing it, right? Every time we teach someone the gospel, when we meet with someone, when we teach and preach in our assemblies, we're doing the same thing because he left us. That's our job now, isn't it? He's not here on earth to do it. So it's our job now to do it. He's not going to come back to this earth and teach again, is he? No, not in any way. So it's up to us to do that. So if there are going to be any good seeds, it has to come from our work. And I think that's something that's kind of left out of this parable sometimes, is that, you know, we have an obligation. We have to do some teaching. We have to do work if we want there to be any other good seeds, as he says. So the Son of Man is the one that sows good seed. So it all ultimately comes from him. He is the sower. And of course, it all ultimately started on Pentecost, didn't it? That's when the kingdom, as far as the church, came into existence. People were added to it. Peter and the other apostles were preaching and sowing the good seed. And there were crops that came from that, if we want to use another agricultural term. There were several thousand on that day. And since that time, people have been added to it and continue to have more and more good seed. Because he says that's what it is. He sows the good seed. He's the Son of Man. And it's going to continue to do that. We also know that the field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are sons of the wicked one. This also teaches us that there's only two kinds, aren't there? I think that's a critical point. I mean, it's either one or it's the other. There's not like 15 different varieties here. There's either those who are for God, if we want to call it that, or those who are against Him. There aren't any of these little gray areas. You know, our society loves the idea of gray areas. Everything's a gray area. No, it's not. Yes?
If there are not too many hybrid seeds.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So it's one or the other. You know, you're either a seed of the kingdom or you're basically a tare, which is a son of the wicked one. And again, it goes back to the source, doesn't it? I mean, there's one source or the other source. And there aren't any other sources. So we can't try and make up a whole bunch of different sources and try and make it sound nicer. So if you're not a son of the kingdom, if you're not a son of God, a son of Christ, then everybody else is a son of the wicked one. That's what he says. It's just, there's only those two. There's wheat, there's tares. And there aren't any others anywhere. So whenever, you know, we look at the world, that's all there is. And unfortunately, some of those are in the church, which, of course, makes it even worse. But that's later about that. So we also understand that when he talks about the field being the world, everybody in the world is accountable to Christ. It doesn't make any difference if they were raised in India or Antarctica or anywhere else. Jesus is Lord of all. Isn't that what the Great Commission says in Matthew 28:18? Jesus said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. So All men, regardless of where they live, are under his authority. They're all accountable to him. They all have to answer to him. You know, we live in that religiously pluralistic society that says there's countless ways to heaven. There's countless ways to God. You can go this way and that way and that way and that way. Jesus says, no, you can't. He says there's one way. Everybody, regardless of what kind of religious or no religion you were raised in, you're still accountable to Christ. Every single person. And of course, we've also lived through a time and are in a time when that's not the politically correct thing to say. But just because it's not the politically correct thing to say doesn't mean we don't say it. We teach the truth, whether it's politically correct or not. You know, it wasn't politically correct in the first century for them to say that either. Everywhere the disciples went, what did they do? They turned it upside down. Okay, because the teaching was so unique and different, and it did. It turned people's beliefs on their head. And so that's the same today. I mean, we're not concerned about being politically correct. We're concerned about pleasing God. And in going back to the beginning of time, God's never been a politically correct God. Ever. Because he's the only one. And so that idea of being exclusive, unique, the only one, you know, flies in the face of our Al culture and other cultures as well. But it still doesn't change the fact that it's true, that he's the only one. And I think we can learn that from this parable. That, you know, when Satan is working in the world, when he's sowing, you know, he's trespassing in a sense upon Christ's work and world. So all people, the whole world, all of humanity is subject to him. So he says the two types. There's the good seed, which is the wheat. He says these are the sons of the kingdom. These are the ones who've, you know, that the seed, the word of God from the prior parable, is taken root in them. And that good seed has changed them. And now they're good. It's the good seed. But it's only good because it comes from God. You know, every good gift comes from the Father of lights. Everything good comes from him. So if it's the good seed, it has to come from him. It can't be anything else. So the word has taken root in him. And they're producing good seed. And, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. And we'll look later and how he describes these particular ones. But even when you're a really good gardener or when you're a really good farmer, sometimes it's really hard to tell the difference between the wheat and the tares. Because some of those weeds look exactly like the good stuff. And that's the same way it is in the world and even in the church as well. Sometimes it's hard to tell. Okay, and that's something we learn from this. Sometimes those bad seed look like the good seed. And you have to be really, really good at telling the difference. And so in the parable, you know, some of the servants said, you know, do you want us to gather up the tares out of the field? He says, no, let them both grow together because there's coming a time of harvest. There's coming a time of harvest. And at that time, there will be a separation, right, between the wheat and the tares. It says there's going to be a final separation between the two. And what is this? He says, well, therefore, as the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of this age. Just like you don't keep the weeds around, do you? No, you destroy them. You get rid of them. You separate them. So he says, at the end of the age, there is coming a great harvest. Remember the song, I don't remember who wrote it, Sowing the Seeds of the Kingdom? That's kind of what that song is about. It's about this parable. And about there being a harvest. And there is going to be a harvest. And there's only those two groups that's going to be separated. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. The enemy, we already mentioned, is the devil. He's the one that sows all that is evil or wicked. Everything that's evil and wicked and immoral and ungodly in the world ultimately has its origin in Satan. I mean, that's what he does. He's not going to sow good seed. He wants lots and lots of weeds, doesn't he? And you've gone by fields before where it looks like the weeds have way overpowered the good stuff. Well, in a sense, that's what Satan wants in the world. Satan wants the weeds, the tares, to overpower what's good. So what's he going to do? He's going to sow as much bad as he can get. Because he wants lots of weeds. He wants lots of tares. He wants lots of wicked ones. That's his desire. Because he wants lots of company. Isn't that what it's about? He wants lots of company in eternity. Satan doesn't want to be by himself, so he wants as many people, souls, to be there with him as possible. So he's busy. And at the end, there is going to be a gathering. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and those who practice lawlessness. Now he starts talking about some of those types that will be gathered out. And notice what has changed. You know, during the age, Jesus is the sower. But at the end, he becomes the judge. And in some respects, the executioner. That's why he becomes. So his role changes. He's soon going to be a judge, or someday will be a judge. This is what happens if we go ahead to Matthew chapter 20. Let's see. Matthew chapter 25. At the end of the chapter, we'll just read a few verses. Beginning in verse 31. It says, when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another. As a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats, and He'll set the sheep on His right hand and the goats on the left. And in that particular account, He talks about why that happens. And so it is going to happen. There is going to be a harvest. The wicked from the just. There are a tremendous amount of lessons here. One of the things that those who don't like church discipline, they use this to say, well, we should never practice church discipline. This doesn't have anything to do with church discipline. I mean, he doesn't even address church discipline in this parable. That's the furthest thing from his mind. But when you're wanting to find something to help with your belief, then you will go to about anywhere you can find it. There's so many places in the New Testament that talk about the need for church discipline that I don't think we even need to read some of those verses. But they're all over the New Testament. So this doesn't have anything to do with church discipline at all. It does have to do with the fact that at the end, we're going to have a judge who will perfectly separate the good from the bad, the wicked from the moral, the bad from those who are good. Yes. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. That's very, very true. And Jesus said that in Matthew 7, didn't he? He said, most everybody's going to choose the broad way. So that's right. That's a good point. It sure is. We do need to know and understand. He says they'll be cast into the furnace of fire. There'll be wailing and gnashing of teeth. These are some phrases that's used in a lot of places in the New Testament. The word wailing there comes from a Greek expression that means a loud expression of grief. You know, someone that is in great agony for probably a lot of reasons. And the word gnashing there comes from a word that means extreme and utter despair. So this teaches us, you know, without a doubt that there is a place of punishment. There is a place of punishment, just like there's a place of pleasure and wonder and love. There's also a place of pain and agony and despair and hopelessness. There is a place. And he says, those who go there, those that offend, and those who practice lawlessness. And those are kind of two very, very broad categories that he talks about. Those who offend. These are people who can do all kinds of things to try and get people to stumble. And of course, anybody that teaches anything that's false, that's not in accordance with God's Word, will cause people to stumble and fall. That's why we have to be so careful about what we read and what we listen to and what's taught. Because those type of things can cause people to fall, to stumble. And those people are offensive. They're offensive because they offend. So hypocrites would also fall into this category. Because when people who claim to be religious and spiritual and Christ-like and so forth don't live that way in the world, then what happens? They're offending God. They're offending people. They're offending the church. Yes. Yeah, there are many, unfortunately, that's true about.
And they're gathering them out, yeah. But they haven't remained faithful.
Yeah. And I think there are people like that, both in the church and out of the church, and I think that's something. I think here the kingdom is talking about the entire world. But I also think that in this parable, we understand that he's talking also about people that's in the church. In other words, not everyone, as Misty brought up, not everyone in the church, the kingdom, is going to be, you know, they're not going to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. And that's a very, very sad thing, but it's true. That's why we're told to do what? Be faithful. All the way to the end. Because you can lose your salvation. And that's a really good point, Misty. I'm glad you brought that up. Because that's going to happen. And some of the others, parable of the dragnet we'll get to later, and some of the others teach that maybe a little more clearly or emphatically. But it's certainly taught there, and it's something we have to be very, very aware of. The good part of it, says the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. And that goes back to that part about we have to understand that if we're going to get something out of these parables, we have to put something into it. I was reading a marvelous book yesterday that was stressing how I don't even really know how to say it, but how wonderful it is to get to know God through His Word. It was just a marvelous passage that this person had written, and it was something I wish the world could experience. Is how wonderful it is to read and study God's Word and find more about Him. You know, understand him more clearly and more intimately and more personally. And we do that through his word. That's how it's done. And that's why we have it. And so it is such a critical thing to do. So the righteous will shine forth. So there again is the difference between those who offend and who practice lawlessness. And again, those who practice lawlessness, when someone does something without law, they're doing something without authority, right? That's what it all comes down to. So anybody who practices things that don't have their basis in Scripture then are included in that who are lawless, who will be cast into the furnace of fire. And again, the world, not too many people want to believe in hell. Everybody wants to believe in heaven. I mean, there's always, regardless of what poll or survey you see, there's always tons more people that believe in heaven than believe in hell. But most of the time, heaven and hell are talked about at the same time in the Bible, aren't they? They're almost always talked about at the same time. So who has the power to say, well, this part I like, but this part's a little bit no good. I don't like it. Yes.
There's a little joke or story where a guy goes to heaven, and when he gets there, he sees people admitting neighbors, people are doing like they were really terrible, bad people, you know. They're all whispering and talking to each other, and he asked Jesus, he said, what did they whisper about? Well, they're all surprised that you're here.
Okay. All right. There's, I think, just a lot of lessons we can get from this that are really, really important. But one thing that needs to be emphasized, I think, is that all of the wicked, whether they're in the church or not, all of them will be cast into the furnace of fire. And there's just no exceptions to that. And there's no way we can read this parable and not get that as a lesson. There are going to be wicked people in the last day that's in the church. There's going to be wicked people in the world. And all of them will be cast into the furnace of fire. And that furnace of fire is not going to be a place where you're unconscious or you're sleeping. It's a place of agony and despair, just like he says. You know, there's no way to understand wailing and gnashing of teeth in any sort of positive way. It is a place of despair and hopelessness and separation. You know, knowing that you would be in a place where there would never be love or happiness or peace, that would be a place of torment. But yet Jesus says most people will choose the path that ends up there. No, they don't choose to go there, but they're choosing the path that ends up there. They may not say, well, I want to go to hell. No, they may not say that. But by the choices they make and the paths they take, that's where it's heading. And so I think we have, a tremendous obligation. Now, we can't put them on the path. We can't force them to stay on the path or anything like that. But one thing we can do is encourage them to stay on the right path. And again, they have free will. They have the ability to make their own decisions. But whatever decisions they make, they're responsible for. In other words, the good sons in the kingdom, the wicked tares, they are there by choice. They have chosen that route. Yes?
Do